The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
The topic I've chosen to share some reflections on, it's about stability and impermanence. So, having practiced in the Buddhist tradition, we've all heard a lot about impermanence, how important it is to have insight into impermanence and how that's a very basic insight into characteristic of life. However, there are conditions that support that insight and stability, which is actually the opposite of impermanence. Impermanence is change, things changing all the time. Stability is having some sense of constancy, some stability, so that one can actually be with impermanence. One can both be with it and one can actually have an insight to it. So that's what I would like to talk about today. I'd like to talk about these two opposites and how stability supports being with impermanence, being with change in our life, being with the upheaval. Much of our practice is about gaining insight, gaining wisdom. I like this quote that I just saw a couple of days ago by Sayadaw Ray Ronke. Wisdom is not merely something to be gained with old age. One can be wise in every stage of one's life. To manifest wisdom means simply to step back and see, to reflect, to inquire, be aware, be disciplined, and be focused, not once in a while, but all of the time, moment to moment. This life is precious and fleeting. Pay attention. What I particularly appreciate about this quote is inviting us to reflect, inquire, be aware, moment to moment, and pointing out the precious and fleeting, this impermanent aspect of life, which is important for us to befriend and understand and make friends with. So, as many of us already know, as we've been practicing for a long time, the point of our practice when we sit on the cushion is not to empty our minds and get away from all the difficulty in our lives, even though sometimes the peace and quiet can be healing and calming. More so, I would say, we sit on the cushion, we gain some calm in order to be with everything just as it is, to have the stability, to have the strength of heart, to be with the beauty, with the awe, with the craziness, with the fragility of life, not getting away from it, but really having the stability and the capacity to be with it all. It's beautiful, it's fragile, it's crazy, it's difficult, it's everything. And being with it all, having the stability in our hearts to do that through our practice. In fact, I was just teaching a retreat on the East Coast at the Garrison Institute for lawyers. It was, a 4-day retreat. And not all, but most of the retreatants, the yogis, were relatively new to practice. And many of them had imagined that the point of practice, the point of meditation, was to sit and empty their mind and get some peace. That too does happen, as you know. And the point is not just that, not to suppress and get away from it all, but to gain the stability, build the stability, to be with it all, to really embrace everything that is, all the change, all the impermanence. So a few words on impermanence before I move on to its opposite, stability, that really helps us embrace impermanence. So impermanence, it's both easy and difficult to see this impermanence, this anicca we keep talking about in the Buddhist circles. Impermanence, impermanence. Sorry. It's we can see it on a geological level, oceans, mountains, where there are mountains that used to be oceans and now they're pushed up by the forces of nature. If you go to the Grand Canyon, you'll see that very clearly, and you'll see how over many, many, many thousands of years the river has carved the canyon. So impermanence over a long, long period of time. We can see impermanence over civilizations, over for humanity. For example, the Roman civilization, the Persian civilization, the Khmer civilization. Years ago, I went to Angkor Wat, Cambodia, and Angkor Wat is an amazing, beautiful work of years, I guess decades, of hundreds of artisans working on this temple and basically on this city that is magnificent. And the Khmer Empire in Cambodia, which was in power from 9th to the 15th century, must have had so much resources, so much expendable resources to be able to create such magnificent beauty. You might have seen some of photos of roots, really strange roots growing out. Many movies have been shot there, like the Raiders of the Lost Ark and things like that. It's really breathtaking. And yet, to think about Cambodia today as a developing country, what it has gone through with the killing fields, et cetera, just change. A magnificent civilization having gone through so much change, and now thinking about our civilization, the Western civilization, what's going to become of us? So contemplating change on those levels, nothing is permanent. And of course, our minds don't want to think about impermanence. We want to take everything as permanent. Chapters of our lives, let's make it more personal. We want to think, especially if we're in a good period in our lives, we want to think that it's permanent. It's always going to be like this. People we care about, they're always going to be around. They're going to be at this age. They're not going to die. They're not going to pass. We're going to be like this. Our bodies are not going to change. But of course, if we look back, there have been lots of chapters in our own lives with people coming and going and passing away. So seeing impermanence in our lives. Part of the practice of seeing impermanence in lifespans is also death contemplation, to contemplate both our own death and other people's death. And that can be a difficult contemplation for many because it's the impermanence of us. And our minds have a really hard time usually to do that. I was leading a death contemplation practice some time ago at Spirit Rock. And one practice for death contemplation is as you're meditating, as you breathe in, you say to yourself, this could be my last breath. And as you breathe out, you say, this could be my last out breath. And you continue with that. And I remember at the end of the sitting period, I asked people, what was it like? And lots of interesting responses. And one person said that they would tell themselves, this is my last breath, and then a voice would say, no, it's not. And my last out breath, no, it's not. So it's like that. There's a part of our minds. No, it isn't. It's not our last breath. We're not going to die. I'm not going to die. Everybody else is going to die, not us. And it takes a long time with the death contemplation, which, by the way, is very dear to my heart. It's I think it's a very powerful contemplation to really live a lot more fully, knowing that death is at our heels. Nothing is guaranteed. I could have had an auto accident this morning. Any of us walking out of here, it's not guaranteed. So contemplating impermanence on that level. And then there is contemplating change every day. You don't feel the same way you felt when you woke up this morning, or when you walked into this hall before you did your sitting, or the way you'll feel at the end of the day. There's all change. We go through constant change all the time. And then there is change on the moment-to-moment-to-moment level, that every moment there is really, everything dies in every moment, every mind moment, everything dies and everything is born again. And that's particularly part of the teachings in the Abhidhamma, in the path of purification, also in Visuddhimagga. And when the mind gets very quiet, we can also see that. We can see how every moment there is a death, every moment there is impermanence, there is change on every level, on the level of our body, on the level of our mind, on the level of our perceptions. Every moment there is so much change. There's this body, this being is just change, it's flux. But these are contemplations that we do in time as our practice matures. They arise in their own right. It's not something that we have to rub our nose in it and we have to just do it and force ourselves. It requires stability in order for us to work with our attachment to stability. If we don't have stability in our hearts and minds, we cannot work through the attachment that we have to stability and the fear we have of instability and the fear we have of change on all levels. So, speaking of stability, there are different levels that we can invite and have stability in our lives to actually support us being okay and seeing instability or impermanence or change. Some of these areas we have control over, some of them we don't. And I'll just go over a bunch, and you might see some of these areas you don't have control over, and some you do. So, some of them are societal, actually. Society does a lot better when there is stability in society, both socially, economically, and politically. And it's much easier to have a sense of stability if you live in a society that has these levels of stability in it. It's not a society that it's at war or there's a lot of fear. And I can tell you from my own experience, I was born in Tehran, Iran, before the Islamic Revolution. So I had the good fortune, in quotes, to live in interesting times. It's actually, as many of you know, it's a Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. And those certainly were very interesting times when I was growing up. I was a kid, 9, 10 years old, when the revolution happened in Iran. And it was a time of great instability and fear. where, as a kid growing up, I would see, for example, the pictures of Shah and the Queen up in the class, and every morning we would salute them, and then these photographs were taken down and burned, and they left the country. I mean, that was one example. So as a kid, I thought, wow, anything can change at any time. These structures that as a child I assumed were constant. People that were respected were executed, and their photos were in the newspapers, which is pretty harrowing. But just the sense of instability, major instability, and fear. Anyone could be taken out at any time during the day or night and be prosecuted. And it's interesting, only recently I realized that ever since I was a kid, there was a sense that anything can happen at any moment. There is no stability in life. There's no reliability because of this experience I had growing up. And I only realized that through my deep practice years ago, over the years, getting to a place of seeing change and instability, impermanence on every level, cellular level, did I finally make peace with everything can change at any time and it's okay. This world is completely unreliable and it's okay. And for me personally, that's been a huge gift of practicing the Dharma. Speaking of other levels of stability that we can have in our lives, livelihood. If we don't have stability in our livelihood and there's always fear and worry, it's hard to have stability in mind and heart. Building stabilities in terms of our connection with others, our community, having a stable community, relationships, friendships, being a source of stability, of trust. Having emotional stability is very important for many people. It can be very disturbing, for example, in a period of grief or difficulty, not knowing what the day is going to be like, what kind of emotions are going to come out and show themselves. So, what are some ways that we can help support ourselves to build some stability in our lives? One way for me, I'll speak very personally, my practice actually is a major way that helps me build stability in my life. And the constancy of practice, something that I rely on every day, not just the sitting practice, but throughout the day, every moment, as I'm driving down and realizing I could be late, you know, that's what creates stability for me in my body, in my mind, creating stability so that I can be with difficulty and change. Similarly with practice, routine, having rituals, that can help build stability in our lives. It's like habits can be like an infrastructure scaffold that we put around ourselves so that we can, can hold us up when we're not quite feeling stable. Also, intentions and vows can bring that sense of constancy and stability and dedication. I particularly appreciate in Mahayana, for example, Zen monks, and all monks in Mahayana tradition, take four vows. And those four vows are, infinite are all beings, I vow to save them. Infinite are all attachments, I vow to be free of them. Infinite are all dhammas. I vow to master them. Infinite is the Buddha way. I vow to attain it. So whatever the vow is for you, and I appreciate especially the first line, I mean all of it, but especially the first line, infinite are all beings, I vow to save them. It's impossible, right? So it's, how can you vow to save every single being, especially when you say they're infinite? But it's the spirit, it's that, also knowing that you alone, as an individual, you can't save everyone, but this vow helps one tap into an infinite dimension of possibility that's not our personal doing, but is connecting to it's hard to put words into it. It's not so much ourself, this limited self that is going to do this thing, but the infinite potential that we're all connected to as conscious being, as conscious human beings. So I really especially like that part of these vows. But whether these vows work for you or something that really helps you get in touch with your intention every day, what is my highest intention? Who do I want to be in this world? What kind of legacy do I want to leave? Our intentions to help you align with them over and over again and help create some stability and constancy. Practices of the heart also, such as loving kindness and compassion and generosity, help in creating stability because they soften our mind, they soften our heart. When our hearts are fragile, it's much more easy to be knocked over by the waves. But when we're softer, when we're more open, both kinder to ourselves and kinder to other people, it's easier to be with change, with inconstancy, especially if that instability and inconstancy has to do with relationships. It's easier to be generous with our heart and mind in that way. It's a different stance, it's taking it less personally. Also taking a perspective, the larger picture of humanity and our role in it can counter the instability that can come from self-absorption and this fragility of contraction. So as I was contemplating my talk this last night, I was talking to my partner and I asked him what gives him stability. So we both did this as a contemplation and then we discussed it. And it seemed, I mean, even though I was thinking about it, it seemed like a very productive exercise to actually ask the question, what helps me in my life for me to have stability in my life? And what are the ways that I can be mindful, bring those ways of stabilizing, do them more frequently, be more loyal to them. So with that, I'd like to invite you to close your eyes and actually, let's do this together. And as you sit in your meditation posture, with your eyes closed if you wish, allow your attention to fall on your breath in your belly, a place of stability in your body. Sometimes it might actually help to put a hand on the belly area just to feel that stability in the body, the breath, filling the abdomen. Feeling grounded, feeling rooted. Feeling stable, like a well-rooted tree. And ask yourself, let the question be dropped in to your belly and see what answers come up, if any. If none, it's okay too. Just let them resonate. And let the question be, what helps in creating stability in my life? What are some of the sources of stability in my life? And how can I continue to bring these sources of stability into my life? See what comes up. So, we'd love to hear some of the answers or reflections that came up for you, if you would kindly share. And we have a microphone. We do. Thank you.
So the first thing that came up for me as a source of stability is also a great source of instability. And that would be my husband.
That woke him up.
I better, yeah, right. Not that he is unstable most of the time. But that one of us will die and leave the other one heartbroken.
Yeah. Relationships can often be a rock of stability, as people say that. I'm actually reminded, just as you said this, of the case of Sheryl Sandberg a few weeks ago with her husband. As many of you probably already know, Sheryl Sandberg is number two person at Facebook, and her husband had a freak accident of falling off a treadmill and cracking his head open and dying tragically. And I was seeing on Facebook how someone had written an article about how she's now part of an exclusive club no one wants to be a member of, being a widow or a widower. And in response to that article, there were hundreds, thousands, I don't know how many, I stopped counting, people who had written, me too, me too, me too, I too lost my husband, and I had children to raise, me too, I lost my husband, I lost my wife, I lost, whew, it was overwhelming to see that, the common humanity, so we see how rare it might be, and it isn't. It's such a part of life. And yes, it is a source of stability, people we care about. And when they're gone, there is this losing our mooring, losing our rock for a long time. Yeah, thank you. Other reflections? Yes, and back there.
I came at... Can you hear me?
Mm-mm.
No. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, good.
Okay. I came up with gratitude because, you know, I have certain worries and fears, but right now it's okay. And, you know, I have a lot of stable relationships in my life. And it's sort of like one of my supports is just seeing what I have right now that is good. Mm-hmm. And my routines help that too, you know, walk and work and friendships and things. So that's what I came up with.
Yeah, thank you. Pass it down, please.
I had two things come up. The first thing that it was doing metta. I find that so heartwarming as I do the entire thing. And then the other thing that came up, I had a lot of instability in my life. And what, you know, rather than going, oh my God, what am I going to do? What was me? I have a saying that I say. It's like, it's preceded with a sort of a mental, oh, get off it. But then it's, I live in America and I have a job. And why that works for me is like what you were saying, you were raised in Iran during the, oh my God, interesting times, ouch. There's all this change, even, you know, in America, but there's still we still have a basic stability. Mm-hmm. I'm not in Syria trying to raise and keep my child safe while literally bombs are going on around me.
Yeah.
So that's what came up for me.
Yeah. And that is tapping into the bigger perspective, that whatever your personal problems seem to be in the moment, hey, let's take a look at the bigger perspective of my role, of my place in this bigger society, in this bigger world, in this bigger universe. You know, considering it all, it's pretty stable, it's pretty good. So yeah, great, beautiful, thanks for sharing that. Other thoughts? Back there, please.
I had a thought that surprised me. My father, in World War II, flew seaplanes. These were huge airplanes which could only take off or land on water. And he told me once that if the water was very, very smooth, it was very hard to get the airplane to rise up into the air because it would sort of stick to the water. And if there were small waves, ripples, that made it much easier for it to become airborne, even to the point that if the water was very calm, they would send a boat out to zigzag and make some waves. And there may be an optimal level of stability in my life that's not completely calm and stable. I mean, if everything were perfect and peaceful day after day after day after day, I might well become stuck. So some agitations, variability makes it easier for me to rise into the next stage of my life and experience the variability and enjoy the variability of life. Seasons. It is wonderful to have four seasons and be almost compelled to participate in the variation of life. We don't have that much here, but other places I've lived, there was a lot more variation. maybe the best balance is not completely placid, and you know, but not not disruptive, but just enough to give me the opportunity to see new things and, you know, anyway.
Yeah. Thank you for the comments. And it's what you said is seeing this from a different perspective, which is that having enough stability to be with the instability. Because if it's all stable, then, yeah, there is, you know, it's all, you know, there's no growth, as you were saying. But if it's all tumultuous, then and we don't have any footing in the world, and it's just too overwhelming, we can't function. But there has to be enough stability to be with the instability, such as, for example, if that the common advice given to young people and to actually to all people is, you know, don't try to change your job, you know, break up with your partner and move to a new city and blah, blah. You know, don't do all of these destabilizing things like this. Have some sources of stability in your life, and there are some areas that you can grow and change and learn through, so which is similar as what you're saying. So having some stability allows you to deal, work with the instability and grow and learn through it. And similarly, in the spiritual practice of seeing instability, seeing impermanence, you need to have enough stability in your life to be able to see the impermanence and the instability. Otherwise, it'll all fall apart and feel too unstable. So you'll have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to just, first of all, thank you for participating in the reflection and for those who shared your thoughts. And please do cultivate stability. It's a good thing. It's like cultivating joy. It's not a dirty word in Buddhism. You know, stability. It's good. It supports you as a human being. It supports your being in the world. It supports your being with others. It supports you being with the community. And it supports your practice and your growth, whether you call it a walking the path through liberation or freedom or whatever words you want to put on it. It supports you. The stability supports you to see the impermanence and the instability that's all around us. That's in us. It's us. All this impermanence and change and stability. If there's any other last minute. And take care of yourself. I think part of stability is also not just emotional and relationship stability, but also physical stability. One thing that came up for me in my reflection last night as I was doing this with my partner is sleep is a big aspect of building stability in my life for me. It's so basic. If I don't get enough sleep, I'm emotionally, physically, I'm just unstable. So, get a lot of sleep. So, may the time that we spend together this morning reflecting and practicing be a cause and condition for liberation of all beings, including us. Thank you.